Welcome back to Behind the Studio Door. I'm your host, Molly Darling, here with my co-host, Christian Rivera.
I just walked in from the street. I hope it's okay that I just sit here and podcast with you.
Sounds great. Great. You smell okay, so we're good.
Yeah.
And our producer over here, Chris Lindstrom.
Hello, hello. It's a snowy day in Rochester, but we're here for it.
We are here.
We're going to take the podcast table and go sledding outside after this.
Fantastic.
Just literally turn it upside down. We're all going to, the four of us, just we're going to get on there and make a good luge out of this situation. It's going to be great.
Luge is such a great word.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we're really excited to have the legendary Sean Dunwoody on the show with us today. Sean is a true beacon of creativity and change right here in Rochester. He isn't just an artist. He's a visionary who's reimagining the fabric of our community through his incredible multidisciplinary work. From murals that brighten our streets to projects that bring us together, Sean's influence is woven into the heart of our beautiful city and the community within it. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Whoa, that's a lot there.
Wow, what an intro.
Wow, and then,
you
yeah.
better not Anything? Suck now.
No, like, there's no pressure here. There's no damn pressure here.
I was just trying to honor you.
A legendary Pokemon has just wandered into the studio.
A wild Dunwoody has
Gotta
appeared.
Catch him while you can. Oh, Jesus.
Gotta catch him all. Yeah.
Good to have you.
Good to be here. Good to be here. I like the setup. And I think we could all fit on this table as a big, and I like the word luge. And almost a little, it's almost like a in between a cheese and like some sort of, sexual move.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's.
Maybe a bit of both.
It was either that or tobogganing. And I think luge sounds better.
Yes, it does.
Rochester needs a little bit of all of it, I think.
Rochester needs a lot more luging. That should be your next podcast
series. Right, that's
series.
The show. The luge. Rochester needs
the Rochester luge.
Serious luge.
How it feels.
Maybe okay. We should do something serious now.
Yeah, I mean.
Hey.
Oh,
he's ready.
Is that what it is? Okay, so now I get to experience yes. the sound effects that happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. we're going real cheesy radio over here.
We have live producing in action.
I am loving that. That is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
I gotta
so,
see what you got in your repertoire of yeah, sound effects.
There's a whole lot. Maybe, yeah, we should do a challenge. How many times will Molly say, burr, 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 burr?
Drinking game at home. If you're in that situation, you got a beer.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. Every time a sound effect
like
is played.
Like I'm in a club right now.
Yeah.
Dirty wine.
Yep. Chug that beer when you, right? when you hear a sound effect.
You're an official dance hall DJ once you got that horn in there.
Yeah, you don't want me doing that. My stuff's just going to be so, yeah.
That's all you have to do the whole time.
Da, 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 yeah, da. I'm just hitting the buttons.
Yeah!
I'm no Mark Rebele.
We love Mark Rebele.
So good.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, speaking
transition
of.
Transition from that.
Transition.
Do we get a transition sound effect?
What's the transition sound?
Like a beam me up?
Really bring the energy up for the transition.
Yeah, yeah. It really
kind of
works.
That kind of works. That's almost like a bathroom transition.
Right.
When you gotta go, you gotta go.
Well, and it's great that my next question is... Yeah, so Sean.
I do have to go to the bathroom, but not right now.
We can pause for an early commercial break. Just give me a signal.
That's just fine. I bought a bottle that I can pee in.
All right, great.
Amazing. So we're all set. So
a true professional. just ready to go. Just like, you know, I'm going to stick with it no
prepared.
Matter what.
I got to be prepared. I just came in from outside, you know? So
yeah.
I got a cold. You got to
carry
a bottle.
You never
know
what's going to happen in Rochester.
Got to be
so,
prepared.
Speaking of professionalism
Rochester,
in Rochester.
Carry a bottle with you everywhere you go.
You never know.
That's your hot tip for today.
Yeah, so that's everything tip. I gained from The Legend of Zelda. Carry a bottle with you everywhere you go.
That's really true.
See?
You know what? That might be a great segue. I keep grasping for a segue. I'm like, speaking of Zelda.
Speaking of bottles. Speaking of Looney Tunes. Yeah. Speaking of tobogganing. Sean Dunwoody.
Speaking of illusion with a wild e-coyote.
Yeah. How does that make you feel about your work, Sean?
That's why I paint, you know, fake tunnels on walls.
Delusing?
Yeah. So, you know, it's like the wild e-coyote painting fake, you know, train tunnels so people can run into them.
Amazing.
I hope that's the next.
That was my that was my inspiration for doing art was Wild E. Coyote and the really? Tunnels. No, I'm just.
That should.
And I'm trying to make that segue.
Yeah, you're trying to bring the tone into a serious professional tone. I see what you're doing here. I mean, honestly, you should probably make that your next mural project. And I just want to see how many people actually try to wander into the tunnel.
It's actually a social experiment.
Yeah, it is. Let's go down this dark alley.
See what happens.
Let's see what happens. You know, maybe we become Batman.
Maybe. You know, the segue, I think, actually, is the community projects. Yeah,
you've got your
you
finger
do,
ready.
You know?
I don't know what you... What your,
I don't know.
Oh, that's my mute button.
Oh, I don't know if you're ready to pop off.
No, I'm a passive producer.
He's all ready to pop off.
All right. Go ahead. I like having you in there. Okay.
No one can see what's actually happening in this room right now. They just hear.
I came into this thinking this was going to be the most like focused, professional, serious. We got a lot of things to talk about episode. And this is just not, nothing but like lugeing and tunnels.
I'm not the most serious person in the world.
It's fine.
But if we can get serious.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll get serious.
Well, I mean,
The
metaphysics of art and, well, you know, we're...
Focus, children.
We're talking about, like, cartoons and Zelda and all the things, and I know a lot of your work has been inspired through. I know you had, like, superhero projects and things like that, so maybe that is the segue of how has your work with the community really inspired your art?
Good question. I'd rather talk more about lugeing, but
you know, you can always put it in whenever. This is your episode, Sean.
Yeah, yeah. Work it in. It's an improv project.
Okay, so what was the question again? Because I totally forgot what you asked me. I was thinking of an answer for a question that you didn't ask me. So what was the question you asked?
Yeah. So community in Rochester and how the projects that you've done in the community, specifically with people, you know, like painting murals and inviting folks to paint with you, that kind of thing. How has that inspired your process as an artist?
Okay. Huh. All right. How has that inspired my process? I think as we were talking about cartoons and superheroes and stuff. I always wanted to be a superhero. You know, I thought I was going to be cool ass Spider-Man or something like that. I always wanted to be Spider-Man. I always tell this story because I have to tell this story. I was younger. I must have been about 5 or so. And I had a cassette tape case. For those of you who don't know what a cassette tape is, that was these things you would put in Walkmans or in tape players. And if you don't know what that is, then you better Google it and the hell with you. And so I was collecting, you know, the dead spiders on the windowsill and putting them inside the, you know, that little pocket of the cassette tape case there. And my idea was that if I get this spider blood and I put it in me, I'll be Spider-Man. I'll make it radioactive. So I got these things in there, and my mom had a sewing kit, get a sewing needle out of there, and I'm trying to mush it. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm thinking, I'm getting it in there.
Yeah.
Now I just have to make it radioactive. So there's all these electrical stuff, because my dad was an electrician, so it was all these electrical cords and various other things. And so I found a extension cord with the tip cut off. I was like, oh, yeah.
Perfect.
I'll stick it inside. The blood with the needle, the spider mush.
Don't try this at home,
kids. Spider blood.
And I thought it would actually, I'm ready to go. My mom catches me, boy, what you're doing? You'll kill yourself. And so, go ahead.
To be fair, that is very the thing, John Carpenter. You don't know what that blood would have done. It might have jumped right out at you. Right?
I know, but it was just, it wasn't even blood. It was like mush. I don't know. It was just a bunch of legs, basically. I was probably just, I don't know what it was. I don't know why I was doing it.
Spider-Man wasn't born. An artist was born that day.
Yes, you're really, really committed to the bit.
And from that day on, I started on my costume.
You're not the Miles Morales. Now you're a photographer, Peter Parker.
Right, there you go. I'm on Earth 428.
Yep. The cool-ass Spider-Man.
And so I always wanted to, you know, be a super person. And, of course, there's no physical way to fly around and swing around and do things. And earlier on in my, you know, work, I was influenced a lot by a lot of comic book artists I collect. And one of my favorite comic book artists and major influencer in some of the things I do is Todd McFarlane. You know, going on and, you know, a lot of that time is spent by yourself. You're drawing things, creating things. And how that connected with community started off very, very early with my kids in their daycare. I would go and see them all the time. And the people were there were like, man, you come here so damn much. What are you coming here so for?
like
you
want
to do something? I was like, yeah, I want to paint something. And so I saw that sort of movement of, you know, of little kids watching you paint. They're like, oh, that's cool, mister. Are you painting? obviously I'm painting, but can't say that to the little guys. And to see them and, you know, excited about it and actually asking, can I help? And at the time, I didn't know how to do that. I didn't understand how to do that. And then I sort of fast forward to getting into gallery artwork. I used to be a gallery artist, and I would do a lot of assemblage, piecing things together, showing at universities and colleges and stuff, and lecturing. And this is a story I have told. And then I got to a point where I was addressing an audience about the artwork that was hanging in said gallery. I believe it was at U of R. And nobody looked like anybody that was in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it went back to, if I can't change anything in these four walls, coincidentally, I had a gallery called Four Walls after that, but I'll tell you, we'll talk about that later, how I tried to shift that paradigm in gallery viewing, to not have people under gallery arrest. Mm-hmm. And so, I said, I gotta go to my neighborhood and do something. And it reminded me back of the little kids watching me paint this, you know, I don't know, some space scene or something with Buzz Lightyear in the daycare. And I felt I want to come back and I want to do things, but I want to have people involved in the process of doing that, because it becomes something you don't know how, you don't know the effects of what may happen or how you may shape someone's world or mind. And I wanted people to see a black person painting in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I thought that was important, because one of the things, you know, when I was younger and had my kids and everything, I was broke and we was all on social service, and that's the things I wanted to do, was be an artist. And you know, the system says that's not logical and you're not going to be able to do that. So every opportunity I got, I was like, well, I'm gonna try and do something. I got to make this dream come together some way, shape, or form. And so I realized that exposure is important, and when you're exposed to things, that can actually lead you down different paths. And and so that's why part of it was, you know, seeing a black person in a community doing something, also empowering other people to see things in a different light. So I've had many people that have worked with me or painted with me have gone on to pursue the arts in different career paths of what that may be. And it's always great to see those folks really engage in making things happen. So I hope that answered your question. I didn't go too far off of the beaten path or luge myself. You better luge yourself to the moon
before you lose yourself.
You better let it go.
I was kind of wondering, what was that the same neighborhood you grew up in, and what neighborhood of Rochester was that?
Okay, so I grew up in Markview Heights on Rich Street, which is off of Sile.
Okay.
And then moved to Hudson and Avenue D, then to Portland and Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's always been Northeast Rochester is where I've been. So, yeah.
And that was the same when you were having kids, and that was the neighborhood
same,
you were there?
Same sort of stuff. Yeah, I'm still in the neighborhood. I'm
awesome.
Off of Fernwood, between Fernwood and Clifford. So I'm still in the neighborhood. I'll go and paint the corner store around the block occasionally, which mm-hmm. I did with kids from school 45. And, you know, so I always try to find ways to really engage and have the people be part of the process. So, so I'm still chugging away at it.
Awesome.
From you telling your story, there's a theme I picked up, which was a leadership quality that you kind of rallied the troops in multiple ways, like, you know, painting in public, or you have other people helping you, or, you know, people who have worked with you have eventually moved on to have some of their own artistic careers and stuff like that. Has leadership in that kind of form been like a natural tendency for you, or just like kind of emergent of your own curiosities?
Damn, that's a deep question. I don't.
I tend to do that.
There he goes.
Yeah, don't let the jesterness fool you.
Jeez. I don't know. I don't know if it, I never really looked at it in that light as leadership. It's just, hey, We're gonna figure this out together. We're gonna mess this up together.
Right.
I don't know what I'm doing, so don't really trust me in what I'm doing. But we're gonna step in here with confidence and try and figure it out. I got a goal. I think we're trying to get to, and we'll figure it out there. I mean, I've learned so much from working with people, from working with young people, working with communities. I've learned so much Just from that. So I don't try to say, well, I'm here to lead this.
Right.
I'm just here to understand it. And if you can learn something, I would say each one teach one. That's an each one teach one method. So like if I got people working on a community project, and I'm like, if I've taught you that this is going to be yellow, this is going to be blue, and that's going to be green, and the next person comes around, you tell them what to do. And also, one of the things I've and a lot of creatives have come up to me while in this process, and they're like, "Man, how are you doing that? That's crazy! How you just let somebody just put stuff all up on it, man? What if they mess up?" Well, I say the best thing about it, about paint or whatever it is, you can paint over it. It's never lost. It's just really a way to generate conversation. People start to talk. And as a friend of mine called it, it's also my Tom Sawyer of mural making. So if I've got a lot of area to cover, I can a bunch of other people filling stuff in for me. So it helps in that regard. So yeah, I just like to, I don't think I look at it as I'm here to lead. I'm here to learn in the process from people. And in some of those things, that's where I literally let people make decisions on some of the things that I'm actually making. So if you've been painting there for an hour and I haven't touched anything yet, and you feel, and this has actually happened, I forget which wall it was, where somebody says, "I think this should be purple."
Yeah.
I was like, "You think it should be purple?" Yeah. That's not in my mind at all. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Paint it purple." I'm like, "All right, I'll go with it because you've been engaged in it." I haven't been engaged in it. When I saw, I was like, "Oh, I'm too far. I'm not too close. I'm not, okay."
All good, man. All good.
Okay. All good. And so that, yeah.
The microphones were getting sorted.
Man, you just threw me off with all that.
But he wanted to paint it purple.
Gave people that. Yeah. So it's really that sometimes that sort of thing actually comes into play. And I'll ask, "What should go here? I don't know." "Oh, yeah. Okay. We'll do that. We'll do that." Well, like in one of the last projects I did, the last few projects I've done, when I present my concept, it's about 60% done because I say the other part is literally going to come from people coming around, and I don't know what that's going to have me do or what that's going to have me create. So people are actually part of the design process as well.
That's awesome.
In some of the projects. Yeah. So someone will be like, I'm asking a group of students about something, what they'd like to see. These high schoolers, this one kid said, "I want to see a turtle." I said, "A turtle, all right, a turtle, yeah, because it connects. There's a turtle in the playground. I think we should put a turtle on the wall." I said, "I'll do that."
Oh.
And I put a turtle on the wall, and and I saw him. He was walking down the street. I was like, "See, the turtle's on the wall." I said, "It's connected to the story of creation from the Haudenosaunee and Iroquois people." So I said, "Here, that's how I got your turtle on there." So I found a way. So it's those things that people are really part of that process. So that's why I say, I'm not saying I'm doing this. I'm like, we're going to figure this out together and we're going to get somewhere. Hope that made some sense.
Yeah. It's absolutely not a militant type of leadership, but it's just like I have a vision. This is something I want to do. People come along and fulfill that vision with you.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of, there's a lot of booze in this damn room.
Welcome to the Food About Town.
Alcohol, not what? Alcohol, yeah, not exactly. Ghosts. Let me be clear.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
I'm looking.
If you're thirsty, we'll figure something.
I'm like, what is going on in here?
And the two of us are non-alcoholic, so that's fun too.
Yeah.
This is just the set.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's referring to alcohol, not ghosts, just for clarity.
As far as you know,
there's probably ghosts, but. I haven't sussed that out yet.
Spirits.
We'll get there at some point. Anyway.
What are you doing with so much booze in here, man? What are you hosting parties?
That's a whole nother story. Yeah, we can dive into that because that's one of my other passions, and it's
drinking yourself to death?
Oh yeah, of course. No,
after my own heart, then so I guess.
I think
the Food About Town podcast. Yeah. Drinking yourselves to death.
Well, and I think this also this echoes like my passions. Like when I dive into something, I go in really deep. I can't help myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of why all these people are coming together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Christian's asking about leadership and, you know, Maui's driving this towards like process is because it's hard not to, when people care so much about something they're mm-hmm. doing is, you know, diving into that is, you know, I know you've had that opportunity a few times, you know, to tell your story and go in detail and do these things. And it's fascinating for a lot of people to go into this for the first time. And that's something, you know, Molly's been really pushing with this show, is going into the details, because it's illustrative to people who haven't talked through this before. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, you've got that unlocked because you know how to portray your story at this point. And it's, you know, part of that whole process is like being established and still breaking back to like, hey, what is the process now that you're established versus where you were when you started?
Yeah.
Do you feel established? Like, I know you spoke to before. I really appreciated that you voiced, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. We're just figuring out and co-creating as we go, right? So it's refreshing to hear artists, as many conversations as I have with artists, every single artist says pretty much the same thing. Like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. So is that true for you?
Yeah, I'd say it's exactly the same. I do not feel, as you say, established. No, I have. I feel as if I have imposter syndrome. I'm always hating on. I don't like what I do. I don't like what I produce. I just.
Legendary Sean Dunwoody has been demoted to amateur Sean Dunwoody.
Thank you. Yeah. Sometimes it feels good to be that. I mean. So that's why sometimes I'll try and take on something I haven't done before. So it's like, I don't want to be viewed as that. I'm trying to figure it out just like everybody else. I'm not the best at anything. I'm not the brightest at a lot of damn things. Every day I wake up like, oh man, I'm like, what am I doing? Well, what am I doing? What am I gonna do? Some days, with that in mind, so I'll get to your question.
Please.
With that in mind, you know, people sometimes think you got it all. Well, some people do. I don't. I'm always flying by the seat of my pants. So some days I'm literally like, all right, what am I going to? Since this is my occupation, what am I going to do today?
Right. I should probably do something.
Right.
Who's in charge here?
Right. Right. I got to find the boss at this place.
I need to speak to someone's manager.
Right. I can't keep flipping through Instagram. Somebody fire this guy.
Yeah.
He's wasting time telling him to do something.
Yeah. Well, that's that weird attitude where, you know, when you're in the process of doing the work for so long, that when other people see you as the expert, coming to terms with that. I know it's been a process for me recently in lots of things, both my day job and like what we're doing here. Like that process of people seeing you differently than you sometimes see yourself. And then when you're forcing yourself out of your comfort zone all the time to be uncomfortable. I was bringing back to one of the Behind the Glass episodes where I think it was Mike Delaria was here, and he came in and he was talking about his personal work because he does that stuff to keep him fresh and how uncomfortable he was talking about it because that was his. And it was really interesting, you know, both when, hey, you're one of the visual artists of the city, you define one of the looks of the city, and then, you know, people referring to you as like a leader and all these things, like that combination of all those things where you're trying to throw yourself off base sometimes and you're trying to, you know, trying to figure out what does it mean to now be referred to as, you know, a leading artist in a city. Like that process has to be challenging at this point to try to keep it fresh, but also, you know, basically, you know, live with that side of it too.
Oh yeah. It's, sometimes I have to say, honestly, sometimes it's not the funnest thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, that's, I don't even know how to say this. That's not how I view myself, as you just said. It's not how you view yourself. That's not how I don't want other people to view me that way, to think, oh yeah, here's this guy again. Oh, whatever the fuck with this guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, nah, man, you know, just like you said with Mike, you know, you try to do things to keep yourself fresh and whatever. So that, you know, there's times when I'm just doing anything else that can really just get you away from that, because sometimes people are thinking you're established, thinking of this. In my head, I'm thinking, damn, I'm no, you know, Kehinde Wiley or nothing like that. So, I mean, that's somebody that's established. I mean, I'm just down here, you know, kicking rocks.
Well, you're still on the grind. You're still working. Yeah. It's not like you're stepping back and just supervising. Yeah. Like you're still in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing where, So, and I tend to like that. It gives me a sense of, I guess, feeling grounded. I know a lot of times I've told, you know, get somebody else to do that. Have somebody else do it. And I was like, yeah, I know I should. I know I'm getting old as hell. And there's just a certain shit I shouldn't be doing. But there's just something about it. There's just something about, even if it's a piece I'm working on outside, there's just something about being down on the ground. It's 120 degrees, sweating to death. And, you know, people see that. And people want to talk. And people want to be engaged. That makes me feel as if I I'm doing something. Oh, we got checked. We're going too far. Go ahead.
No, you were just finishing this beautiful thought, and I was going to roll the break. I'm signaling Molly.
Sorry,
and I'm distracting.
Just signaling me.
I'm distracting from this.
There's too many physical things going on.
I know.
There's flocks of birds flying through the studio. Right. And I'm like, what?
What is happening in here?
This is the artist's dilemma. There's too much going on. We're gonna clear our minds, and we're gonna come back from the break ready for more.
Hey, it's Paulie Guglielmo, host of the Paulie Guglielmo Show here on the Lunchador Podcast Network, where we talk entrepreneurship and all of the trials and tribulations, pitfalls and rewards, and there are many, of owning a small business. We do interviews with some of your local favorite business owners, learning how they built their brands, the struggles they faced along the way, and what they have in store for the future. And sometimes it's just me detailing my own daily wins and losses. It's called the Paulie Guglielmo Show, and I'd be honored if you'd check it out. New episodes come out every Sunday morning.
All right, so the booze have been unleashed. I'm not talking about the ghosts. This is not a Ghostbuster situation where we've accidentally pulled the wrong crank and things are going wrong here. But
that could be another show when you pull the wrong crank.
When you pull the wrong crank, right?
Pull the wrong crank.
Right. It comes on right after the Luge Rochester experience. So I'm just telling the person listening so that in case things go off the rails, you know, that might be the reason why.
Always a possibility.
Always a possibility. So I wanted to ask you, like, as we were leading into the break, I heard a lot of very natural, or at least I'm assuming it's natural, like humility coming from you. Like, you're just like, you know, I don't want to be referred as legendary. I'm still figuring it out. I'm still doing my thing. I'm just going through the motions and all of that stuff. But I am curious if there is a big picture vision. Like, are you on a path to something? Are you on a big line of sorts that is leading to something? Or is this just a part of the everyday sort of pushing the boulder up the hill? And then tomorrow I do it again. And then the next day I do it again. What's kind of your general, ethos there? A bigger philosophical question again, but
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, that is, man.
Is there an overarching Zelda quest along with all of these side quests?
That's a better way to put it. I appreciate that.
Is there an overarching, bigger goal to everything?
Yeah.
In some ways there are, and in some ways I guess there really isn't. And I guess that's sometimes I'm really trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
Like even transitioning from, I'm transitioning myself from doing larger outdoor things. I'm transitioning because, like I said earlier, I'm getting old. Mm-hmm. And it was good at the time to get the mission out that I wanted to do and how I wanted to express that, how I wanted to meet people. So things that I'm focusing in on more so now are more, they're always community focused, but and altering physical spaces and getting people engaged in those ways of how we can actually shape something, shifting some legislations and various other things like that. So it's how do you think, how do you use your, as we all are creatives, how do we use that creative brain of ours in new ways that we might not have ventured into? So that's where I'm at now. It will still translate as creativity.
Yeah.
It's just it hasn't maybe been with this particular group in this particular room at this particular time. But let's make sure that this gets a creative push, and a spirit and a passionate push. I think sometimes I've come across a lot of projects and initiatives that tend to lack passion.
Right.
Because it just seems so far away from what's trying to be accomplished. And so it just becomes a process. Yeah. And I always believe there's got to be some passion in that process. Otherwise, I'm just doing it to do it to do it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just me. But so I just try not to. I try not to think of myself as being already set, because I'm not, and I don't want to be out here thinking that I am, because I'm not. I don't feel I am. That's legit what it is. I'm just like, damn, man. I literally every day I'm like, damn.
It's always nice to have a little bit of hunger, though. It's always like kind of hungry. Right. It's just a little bit hungry.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. You know? You gotta have some. I think, that's the way you said it. You put it, you gotta have some food about town.
Yeah.
You've gotta have some hunger about you that makes you want to do things. I mean, I am envious and jealous of so many people around town. It's just like when I see you and you're posting about painting ugly paint night, I'm like, I would love to be able to do that and be a guest. I know. But I'm like, no, I got to finish this damn thing. And I'm like, see, people are doing things. People don't understand that. I am so envious and jealous that people are doing and creating and making things. I'm like, man, I wish I was doing this. Like you talk about Mike. I was talking to Mike. I said, man, I look up to you. You know, I love the stuff you do. Man, I wish I was doing that. Yeah. But I know that everybody's running their own race and doing their own thing. Yeah. But there's so many people just here in town. I'm just like, wow, they are killing it, man. I wish I could be killing it. Like,
and the feeling is very mutual. I mean, it's really interesting having these conversations and feeling the flavor of it coming up in every conversation, where no matter what project people are working on, they're all like, oh, yeah, there's so many people in this city doing cool shit. Because I feel that way about your work. I'm just like, Sean's doing all these cool community projects and like painting these murals, and it's awesome. And it's also, you know, helpful as another artist to know that that's just kind of part of it. You know, you're like, I still have to find ways to like be excited about my work and be hungry. And like something that someone else is excited about my work is usually something that I'm like way over by the time that it gets posted, which is unfortunate, but it's just like sometimes the speed.
So how do you keep your energy? I'm going to ask you a question.
Turn the tables.
Flipping the script.
What is your process? How do you stay hungry? How do you stay above it? How do you keep it moving? How do you keep
it? We need a little transition button of like flipping the script. Da 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 da, flipping the script.
Got it.
That's exactly.
Yeah, that works.
What?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Every single one of these is like.
I need happier ones.
I know, right?
You really do.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's acceptable.
Flipping the script.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel the same way. It's like when the tables are turned and the questions are on me, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think I try to find things that I'm naturally excited about that also are ways that I can serve and help people. And thankfully, I've been through enough shit in my life to know the things that actually do work. Like the ugly art practice is basically therapy that I developed for myself. Mm-hmm. And it helped keep me alive through postpartum depression and all kinds of real life shit, you know? And then I was like, oh yeah, other people might be interested in this. And so that's been my process. It's like, oh, other people like this stuff too. That's cool. Like I would still make it even if other people didn't like it, you know, because the practice is for me. But then the more, it's like that Rick Rubin thing that he talks about, where the more that you make stuff for you, the more you realize how you can serve your community and serve the people around you. It's just like an emergent process. Feels backwards, mm-hmm. but it's like the more you're internal, then you're like, oh, this is how I can help the external. So I don't know if you resonate with that in your own practice.
I like what you're saying. Yeah. I like what you're saying. I like that a lot. Because I know, I'm just saying, going back to you again, I see you're out there dancing and stuff. I'm like, she's doing, giving the good vibes and good energy, which is a good thing to do. And it lightens a day. I have to say, when I see you doing that, I'm like, all right, you're doing the thing. All right. Make it happen. It. Yeah. And I'm like, I wish I could do that. I don't I'm like, I'm not going through that. I hate being on camera. I hate doing those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, I'd love to do it. So I want to applaud you on what you're doing.
There's a certain degree of all of that, too, that I personally appreciate, is this idea of like, you see other people doing all this cool stuff. And then there's a degree of like acceptance. Like at first, people just like beat themselves up where they're like, I can't do that. I wouldn't be able to do that, or I can't try to do that, or something.
I could never.
I could never. Well, that's more of a moralistic kind of thing. But what I'm saying, it's
what I get people at Ugly Art saying all the time. They're like, "I wish I could be like you. I could never be that creative.
Right? I could never be that cool."
But you are. You just forgot. But, like 3-year-old you knows.
Right.
You
there's know? A balancing point of being able to release into what your kind of like full essence of creativity is as a person. But then there's the other side of like. Kind of accepting that, like, that's just not my thing. Mm-hmm. That's not me. That's not what I'm going to do. And in that sense, it's like you can start to now cheer people on who are doing that because you're not necessarily in competition with them, mm-hmm. really. It's just like that's what you just cheer people on, and that's what starts to kind of build this cohesiveness, I think, that's really interesting around creatives when you see, like, oh, you're kind of fulfilling this niche that I'm not. That I don't do, and you do this. And that's what builds a network. You kind of connect to each other, and you're like, I know this person that does this thing, and this person does this thing. Molly dances. I don't know. You can go watch her. like that kind of thing.
It's like, I got my niche covered. No, it's just, it's nice to know that I don't have to do it all or that you don't have to do it all. You know, it's like, I can do my thing, you can do your thing, and we're all part of a community that's got the biodiversity of each of the creatives, you know, which involves. Works. Yeah. What are you excited about right now?
Well, oh, sorry. I was going
to. No, yeah, yeah, go for
continue,
it.
Continue. Continue. Say
it. I think that's maybe what one of the things you triggered it and made me think about it, that sense of competition.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't like to hear that shit about, you know, doing it. I know you're doing your thing because I don't want to feel as if I don't, not that I just don't want to say, I don't want to be out there like, yeah, you know, check this out. No, that's not.
Right.
There's nothing.
You heard you heard it here first. Sean Dunwoody is the shit.
Wasn't sure where that was going for
I wasn't sure either. I was stumbling. Yep. But we got there.
Yes.
Uh-huh. No, but I understand not wanting to get stuck and crystallized into this almost ego state of like, oh, I'm the shit. You know, it's like really nice to get that reflection back from other people. But then it's also like, okay, but what's next? Like, what am I doing next? You know, and I'm curious about that. Like, what's on the horizon for you? What are you excited about in your work? So you said you're transitioning. What's that looking like for you?
So what that looks like is like my not-for-profit Hinge, my partner Suzanne and I, we've been working on edugagement with people along the Interloop fill that is coming along. So that's actually brought a whole new life and energy to what we do and what I do. So that has brought us on local. Regional and national and international stages to actually address this and talk about that. And that's where becomes and it's not on an issue of complaint, it's the place of solutions and how do we work together? How do we work together? So we're literally working with different folks from Buffalo to Albany to New York City, folks in Louisiana, folks in Texas. So it's created this whole other sort of consortium of people who are, you know, saying let's remove these highways and these barriers and what it has done to some areas that might have been historically black and brown. And how do we repair those? And that comes to things like the Reconnect to Communities initiative that the federal government's put into place. So it's just good to have those sort of angles. Mm-hmm. So that way I can, I'm literally yelling at, you know, Chuck Schumer, like, man, you better get some money over here. Cause that make any sense.
Seriously.
It's good to do, but not in a negative way, but right. having some, for lack of it, for that we've been able to build up something of influence that can push a needle in a certain way and get some voices heard that might not be heard otherwise. So that's one of the things that,
And that's hingeneighbors.com.
Yes.
Is the is the home for that information, hingeneighbors.com. How'd that term hinge
not the dating site, not
yeah.
the dating
yeah,
site.
Yeah, not yeah. the dating site. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah. How did that end up coming into play with that, cuz it seems like that's obviously very purposeful, like this new connection that's coming into play.
How did our organization come together?
Yeah, or the name too, because seems very purposeful.
The name. We were sitting down. Where were we sitting down at? Somewhere.
Sitting somewhere.
Nice.
Sitting down somewhere. And we were trying to figure out how we're going to structure this organization. And we were at a coffee shop. I don't remember where we were. But we were consulting with Glenn Kellogg. And for those who don't know who Glenn Kellogg is, he's the guy who created Hart's Grocery. Not the original Hart's Groceries mm-hmm. that was throughout the city.
No, that would be challenging to be collaborating with him at this point.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of booze in here. So.
And he said, oh, so what you're basically trying to do is hinge, you know, these neighborhoods together. I said, oh, you just said it. He said, you said what? I said, that's what we're going to call ourselves. So the Inner Loop itself became the hinge pin of bringing together Market View Heights and Grove Place neighbors to actually to complete a plan for the neighborhood, which did go into play. We realized that there's a process, plan, and implementation. Most people are invited to the planning part where things have been figured out. Mm-hmm. But we realized we needed to disrupt the process. And that's what we did, was disrupt the process by education with folks, getting people really thinking about what's happening and presenting that plan and moving it forward. So that then affected the plan when we were meeting with the design firm and some of the city folks, and they saw this plan that the neighborhood devised for this smaller section of the Inner Loop, not the full span. So they were like, oh, we never thought about doing this or doing that. Well, like, you guys are supposed to be the experts, but the mm-hmm. people who are the experts are the people who live there, and sometimes it's best to shut the fuck up and listen to them. Right. Well, how do we even get on this subject? I don't even know how we got on this
subject. Well, I think that's
he wanted to know about the hinge.
No. Yeah. But I think that's kind of that kind of leads me into the question I was thinking about is, you're launching something like that, and through your visibility and through the stuff that you have done, doors have opened of possibility of all the different directions that you could go down to make your impact in a way that's different than the individual piece. Now you're looking at systems. Now you're looking at things that are wider ranging and could have different kinds of impacts. When you have all those doors open at this point, how do you decide on the doors that you go into? Because it's another thing when you're thinking like, oh, the creative process of creating one piece or a series of pieces or a mural or this collaborative thing. But now the doors that are open are the things that we talk about when we're talking about systemic things. These doors are now open. How do you decide which doors to go into?
Good question. It's just like we talked about earlier. I don't know. I just try them out. Yeah. So this, as you talk about the process and creativity and something I've mentioned earlier, this can be used in many different shapes and forms. That's how I approach it. So I approach it as if, damn, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know somehow it's supposed to look like we might end up with something. There might be trees here. I don't know.
something will happen.
Something will happen. How do we get there? And that's really how I approach it. The same way, if I'm stepping up to a blank canvas, I'm like, okay, what am I doing? I don't really like that. Ooh, I messed that up. What else can I do to, mm-hmm. to cover that up? So it's the same sort of approach. So that's, I think, that approach that we've both adopted, my partner Suzanne and I, and that we just look like two opposite people you would never see working together in the world. Well, I'm an older black dude, but I'm a black dude, and she's an older white lady.
Amazing.
It looks like two people you would be like, you wouldn't, either he's driving Miss Daisy or something is up.
Is this a buddy cop movie? Two Detectives, season 12.
Right, there it
That's
is.
That's the subtitle. Hinge, a.k.a. Driving Miss Daisy.
Driving Miss Daisy, or,
just kidding.
Hidden something, I don't know, whatever it may be. So it seems like, but it's been, I think those some of the things. So as you build your team of your potters, for your podcast.
Potters with two D's.
It's the same thing. We use our
for sure.
Potters with double D's.
Double D's.
Yeah.
Ooh, they might lose.
I guess it's.
We've brought it full circle.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And good night.
We are done. Our work here is done.
I guess it is. It's tough when you see the opportunities in front of you to, harness that energy into a direction. And, I appreciate that. And that's, my partner, my co-founder on all this. He's the one trying to pull me back to, we're going to make it work. We're going to run into roadblocks. we can't plan everything out perfectly. We have to be ready to adjust. We have to be ready to go. And nobody else knows the strife sometimes. They only know that you're doing something that's going to make a difference. And like all that, you know, the swirl of the everyday is the stuff you have to live with as the person inside the machine. And you have to get through all that to get to the end goal of, hey, we're going to try to make a difference with what we're doing. How do you work through that process still? Like, I know you said you're working on it every day, but like that swirl of all the stuff that people don't know about that you have to sit with. I mean, it's part of the artist's journey too. You're sitting with a lot of different emotions to put stuff out.
Good question.
Yeah, like that's
12
a good question.
Emotions.
That's a real good question. I'm trying to figure out how to even answer that, but I hope this answers it as I think out loud. And I talked about, you know, being in other places and speaking in other rooms and being engaged. So I've been brought into other arenas and also been hired on to other arenas and consult. And it's sometimes, you know, you're when I approach these things, these initiative, whether it be a city initiative, a state initiative, or whatever it may be, I approach it as, okay, what can I bring to the table to make something beneficial? What do I add that makes it beneficial? Otherwise, I can't be a part of this. And so some things I am selective about, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to be part of that. I'm not going to do that. And I am always playing with those emotions and those feelings, you know. It's like one thing I'm on now. Hell, I'll talk about it. Why not?
Yeah, let's go.
One thing I'm on now, you know, which, you know, some people did hate me for it. But is, you know, when people talk about the downtown bid, the business improvement district, I am on that committee to create that. And it came about because I was on the committee to say we needed a downtown management entity, which was the same committee that said, let's move forward, Rock the Riverway, which on that, I got to tell this story because I don't know if I've ever tell this story often, but I think I do. When I'm on that advisory and on the DRI, so when people see things going up downtown, it was like, yeah, I feel like this project is important, that one not so much important. Let's give funds to that. But going back to the Rock the Riverway Advisory Committee and going out and actually listening to people, having open forums, and a group that would always show up was Rochester City Skate Park. They would always show up. Alan, Aaron, love those guys. They'd always show up. And coincidentally, when I talked about Four Walls Art Gallery, the first grip tape show that they did fundraiser for it was at my Four Walls Art Gallery, which was on Elton Street, which is where La Poutine's restaurant is. Whole bottom half was my gallery and performance
Poutine.
Space.
Okay. Shout out to Lizzie and Ronnie, Petit Poutinerie, killing it every day.
Got it. Yep. Wow, so, and that's awesome. A whole other story explaining what I did at that gallery, Gallery West. So I would have heavy, like these people were making mosh pits, and I've got Elizabeth Lyon's glasswork hanging on the wall. It's just, I did a whole different mix for food. I did, you know, Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving. So we'd have, you know, popcorn and toast. So I would try chili.
Amazing
waffle day. I was like, let's do everything different. Okay, so going back to
we
stayed,
we talked about being a little bit hungry. Now I'm a lot of bit hungry.
Still got a whole other podcast to record after this one.
Going to the point of being just, you know, different things swirling around, different people, and listening. You try to listen and try to be community connected. You try to find out what's best. So we're going through this process. It's the 11th hour of deciding what gets funded, so that Cuomo can sit on his podium and say, we're funding this, we're funding that. There's a booklet already prepared that's sort of dished out. And I'm like, wait a minute, man. Where the fuck is the skate park? We had an hour discussion about why it's important. Some people within the room, two people, felt maybe if we built said skate park, and these guys have been rallying for 10 plus years on this, trying to get it moving.
Such a long time.
Such a long push. They've been pushing in gym. I love them all. They've been pushing and pushing and pushing.
I don't know what else they have to do to show how much it helps the community, honestly.
Some people thought it was going to be racist because, no, that's only a suburban thing. Black and brown people can't afford skateboards. All this literally in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And And I say all this to say, and I'm texting Alan. I'm like, yo, man, I need a after our argument with the commissioner at the time, and everyone else at the room, they're like, all right, you sold me on it. Let's give him X, Y, and Z. Let's give him 800. At first, it was $800,000. I'm texting right now. I'm like, yo, I need a quick write up to say right now because they're getting ready to give me this money. It goes through. We have a little bit more discussion, and the commissioner at the time said, well, I found some more money. We'll give him some more money. Let's do $1 million.
Yeah.
To see where it goes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All that to say that it was that moment of creative thinking. It was that moment of seeing community at work, that I wanted to see. I felt it was my responsibility, mm-hmm, to speak up for those who had been trying to do something forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when I approach a lot of these projects, there is a background behind actually sitting down with people, talking with people. And I'm not going to get into the politics of, you know, what, because some folks are pro-bid, anti-bid. I can tell you my approach, mm-hmm, and how I came to it from being back from advisory committee,
yeah,
and wanting a downtown management entity.
Mm-hmm.
Is because at the time, even prior to that, there weren't that many people living downtown. Remember, mm-hmm, these were all offices.
Right.
The people who did live downtown were pushed into corners and next to the river, mm-hmm, for 40 years. That would be people in Andrews Terrace. That would be people at St. Simon's. That would be people Erie Harbor. That would be all the people that's already been living on the river and living downtown when nobody was thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And in our talk and earlier on, and with whatever management entity could be, it needs to meet with the people and program for those people, because this is a point along the river, whereas you will now, when you will now have programming that that people that you didn't program for would come to. Mm-hmm. Simple case was St. Simon's, which is across from the brew house, mm-hmm, right? Meeting with folks over there. He said, hey, man, we just want to see the water and put some benches out. Not much to do.
Yeah.
It was done. The reason that's there is because the people requested it. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood asked for something that was that, I'm not saying simple, but it made the whole element a beautiful thing. That was and the Genesee folks heard that, and they literally had some of their employees the first time around on like ropes cutting things with trees. But this is a communal moment of actually listening.
Right.
And so I have to say, when I'm on something or I'm engaged in something that I think is going to, it's something that's connected to community and it's something that's a policy or a procedure or something that's happening, I try to do my research to make sure that I'm adhering to what I said to myself and what I said to those individuals who were in places of commissioner and mayoral positions who stated we have the ability to do something for our people. And so that's how I approach things. That's the lens of how I look at what I do. And so sometimes when you're producing and you're creating, you're doing something, you every time it's not going to go smooth. Every time it's not going to go perfect. Mm-hmm. And there'll be opposition and people just don't know, as you talked about earlier, people don't know all the other shit you've got to go through, mm-hmm, in order to get something to go.
For sure. Well, and I think what I'll, you know, just, I'm going to throw something out there, because being in the room is always a compromise. There is, yeah, and I'll speak for myself because I'm in whatever rooms I'm in. Being in the room is a fundamental compromise. It always is. It can't not be.
Yeah.
It's always a compromise. And it's, you know, it's never perfect. I'm an analytical monster. That's how I perceive everything. I live in the gray. That's where I live. I don't live in, there's no clean black and white. Yeah. There is the gray. That's the only thing I have to live in. Mm-hmm. And the compromise is, if you're in the room, you can advocate for things the best you can. If you're not in the room, things are going to happen anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, nothing's perfect. There's never a perfect answer. Like, this is not the necessarily the optimal allocation of every resource that could be optimized to, right, make the most good according to our, according to all of our values. Mm-hmm. But being in the room does offer the opportunity to contribute in a way that you can portray your views strongly and vocally and through many different means as an activist. And I applaud that side of things. I am not the best at that. That's not what I'm best at. I believe in many of the activist values, but I live in compromise. I live in the balance point of the world. Mm-hmm. So I'll say from my perspective, I appreciate you being in the room and doing your level best to contribute and put that voice out there as best that you can.
Yeah, and that's all I can do. I don't speak on behalf of anyone else, except for the case with the skate park. Like, literally, they literally came to every meeting.
You literally should do that.
But otherwise, I approach it as this is just my personal feel. This is me. I don't represent no one else. Mm-hmm. I'm just coming to it at this point. And so, the older I get, that's what I try to do. You know what I mean? And I think some of that, I didn't talk about that, but kind of what started off Hinge was when I ran for city council. I ran for city council, I think in 2017. I can't remember when it was. And I didn't win. I'm glad I didn't win, because that then in turn gave me a push to do something else, to really be engaged in other ways. And the value of that, I recommend that everyone run for something. Oh, it's going to be a pain in the fucking ass. Excuse me. It's going to
really need that experience.
Really
in
puts
lives.
You through the ringer.
Oh, you're going to hate it.
It's some life experience.
You are going to hate it. Oh, but it is so beautiful. Yeah. But you are going to hate it. You're not going to be home. You're going to be listening to people all the time. You won't even know what the hell you're thinking. You're going to have your stump speech all the time. Oh. But the beauty of it is you actually get to hear people. And, from that, we went to every quadrant of the city because it was at large. So no matter if it was on, if I'm talking to somebody in Jefferson Avenue, East Avenue, Park Avenue, Joseph Avenue, no matter what it was, when I'm sitting down and people are inviting, hey, come back to the barbecue and come get some chicken. Or people are saying, hey, come on inside and have some wine and we'll just talk some more. And I'm sitting on your porch for like 3 hours talking. It's people, genuinely, people are people and people wanted the same thing. They just wanted connectivity. They wanted to be heard. They wanted respect. Yep. They wanted to feel safe. And, you know, they want to feel everything's going to be okay at the bottom line. You know, you can't solve everything, but that was the bottom line. And that drove, that sort of fueled me to be like, all right, this is kind of how people are. Everybody pretty much wants basically the same thing, regardless of our skin color, regardless of our ethnic backgrounds, regardless of our political affiliations. You know, everybody pretty much wants the same thing in life. And so that brought a new perspective in life and what I wanted to do and how to be engaged more with people, which then led me to I'm over my time, I want to talk about just in a moment of distress. You know, in 2020, you know, we got the pandemic, and just all the things are going. I'm going way over on this thing.
Oh, you're all good, man. Keep it going.
I would like to tell, because you're talking about all these things.
Yeah, of course.
This is our show. We can go as long as we want.
Yeah, keep it going.
Richard Colon is waiting in the hallway. We can wait as long as he needs to. It's fine.
But
it's okay. He's making faces. He's making coffee. No.
Don't worry about it.
Okay, I don't worry about it. I stay in my space. Yeah. It's all those things, those compromise, those finding things. It's all those balances, and you're trying to do things. And the pandemic gave me another level of things. So then that came along, and then it's like, all right, I was working during the pandemic. Is somebody over there?
Yeah, Richard Colon's here.
Yeah,
he really is.
we're doing next with him.
Oh, you do. I'm sorry.
You're fine. You're fine.
It's just those things. Okay.
If you didn't hear, he yelled to.
Got it. It was one of those things. One of those things of compromise and one of those in the room moments. All right. So I'm in the room. People are like, all right, we want to do something. So I'm on with the county and other advertising agencies, and they're like, hey, we want to do this campaign, and we want to make sure 6 feet apart, you know, the kind of thing, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And I'm in there with, and I'm like, no, we need to do something pushy. We need to put dead bodies and skeletons on the street and tell people you're going to die.
We need to do something pushy.
They said, okay, Sean, thank you. We think this is over. I said, oh, you just gave me the best idea ever.
Yeah.
And so that's
and
literally,
you did it.
And I did it. And that was, and the city said, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Great.
And it so, was like the most visually impactful thing. I feel like it's a great way to bring it around full circle is that that project, I would say, was the most visually impactful way, like using creativity as the leverage point to really get the clarity of the message out there. Y'all, like, wear a fucking mask.
Yeah, do it.
And it's going to be fine, all right? But otherwise, if you don't, it's not going to be fine. Yeah, you're going to be dead. You know?
So, yeah, like, it was. Like, it was. And so
lots
and
more booze.
I didn't go with the compromise. And I said, let me do this.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I would go to every quadrant in the city where I know nobody's listening to NPR or Fox News.
Right.
So I'm actually on the corner.
Right.
I'm on Jefferson spray painting these things. People are like, what you doing over there, man?
Right.
I'm talking to you about, you know, COVID. They're like, oh man, let me take a picture. So now that's being spread to their network.
Yep. Right.
So that was the whole mission behind that.
Almost like a virus.
Yes. which then, you know, it was all the things, you know, it was, you know, painting Black Lives Matter and doing that. The original thing was actually going to be on, was going to be on Main Street.
Yeah.
But then it got changed. And I was, before that, I had ordered paint. I needed 100 gallons of paint. But I said, hey, let me get 100 gallons of yellow paint. My guy says, that don't have that. I was like, there's not enough yellow base. I was like, well, let me get green. That's the same base. I was like, he's like, I can give you blue. I said, okay, I think I can work that because if we're doing it on Main Street, it's going over the Genesee River, and the Genesee flows north. North of South, just like the Nile, and if I think about ancient Kemet, Egypt, ancient Kemet, the color blue was invented by my people. So yes, I can get away with it and pull it off.
There you go.
They changed the location. They said, hold off. We changed the location. They put it on Court Street, and I'm out there painting. And I knew I couldn't do a group. I couldn't invite people to do this because I would get way too many people, and I would no way have to be able to control that. So I had a handful of people and city folks do this with me. It goes out, gets posted, and I got a great deal of backlash about doing that. Reason being, because it was blue. People ask me, was it political? Did people make you do this? I'm like, no, it's literally because I didn't. There's not enough base. Yeah.
It's what I could buy.
That was what was available.
They were like, there's literally nothing. He says, I'm looking in, there's not enough in Western New York and mid-state yellow base to make you 100 gallons of paint. And this was when there was a paint shortage.
Right.
That's what happened. But talk about feelings and getting things.
Of course.
I'm getting kicked back because I did that.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought the location was going to be a terrible location. But then once I saw the radio stations, the majority conservative radio stations posting that on their feed and getting the word out, I was like, oh, it accomplished something great.
Trickery through color. Manipulation.
There it is. There
on
it
accident.
Is. Good job.
And while I look at this, ghost of Kwajie, I got to bring this story in. Sorry. So, you know, you get all these things.
Sean Dunwoody people, turbo mode.
People are calling me up and saying, hey, news people and everything, they think I'm some kind of, whoa! They think I'm some sort of, you know, like you said, leader or whatever. What's your take on this? And what's your take on this? And I'm like, I have nothing to say. I don't want to say anything to anyone. Yeah. So I don't answer their emails. I don't answer their calls. And I'm flipping through Twitter and I stop on a image that Kwajie posted. And he said, enough. I said, that's what I'm going to do. I said, I won't answer any reporter's call. I won't talk to the newspaper. I'm going to go over to City Blue, which has since fallen down. And I said, I'm going to take exactly what he did because I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I want other people to be engaged and do that. I mean, in a couple of hours, that wall was covered up, which then led to this. I did this prior to doing Black Lives Matter because with Black Lives Matter on the street, I told the city I want to amplify that voice. And what I'm going to do is paint MLK Park, the pit, the amphitheater. I want to paint that all black. I said, if you want me to paint that street, I have to paint that whole thing black because people need to express themselves. And that was one thing that I didn't know what was going to happen, but I was so happy. And I'll go back to Kwajie, and he called it the people space, and it became the people space, and it became a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And it was out of hurt. and just feeling that. And I felt like everybody else needs to feel that or express it or talk. But yeah, there's a lot of other side stories and great things that happened from that. But I've run out of time. Give me the Oscar music march.
No, but I mean, like, you know, to kind of bring it all home in this very unhinged second half of the podcast.
Yeah, it just went all over the place.
But we warned everybody. It couldn't be in the most. It was coming.
It couldn't be in the most, in any more of a beautiful way to. I mean, I hope we captured at least some little piece of the essence of what you bring in terms of you being a human being. It's about, you know, it's about the stories. It's about the people experiences. It's not as much the abstractions that a lot of people get caught up in, the assumptions of what things are like. You know, you're in the trenches. You're doing stuff. You're doing what's, frankly, probably a bit of a curiosity and a bit of, like, your personal story and personal experiences and all those things. So as much as I don't want to call you a legend because I don't want to trigger you, but I think you're a pretty special person, and I do appreciate you being here and being able to share these stories with us and spend time with us. You know, even if the word special can be used for the short bus version, which I don't think I'm allowed to say anymore, but I'm going to say it.
No, that's we used that term when the cassette tapes were out, actually.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's old, man.
That's fine. I'm getting tired. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, this has been a great conversation. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add, Molly, while we wrap up.
Thank you for being here. Yeah, I appreciate you, too.
I mean, thank you for being here. This was great. I feel like we could just talk for hours, obviously. Well, that was me talking.
I just hijacked this whole thing.
This show is about you, Sean.
Oh, okay, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you're going to be in the title, probably.
I mean, yeah, it's an interview with Sean. We really got to work on that soundboard.
Yeah, we got to get you some new effects. Well, thank you. I appreciate you all. I appreciate the time of being here and actually being able to spend time with you folks and just actually just be engaged.
All right.
You're funny, dude. I like you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah.
You ready to go luge?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go luge it.
Let's do it. We're going to go luge at hingeneighbors.com. Go to hingeneighbors.com to volunteer, donate, or find out more about their work.
Or get luged.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Sean's swinging through Rochester.
Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.